Welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, August 22nd, 2002. Today's session is Mountain Stories, Andy's Alive, The World's Deepest Canyon, presented by Jonathan Frericks. The session number is FRJ-2002-09. Let's listen in.
I think we're about ready to start here. I don't appear to have focus, but is that focus? Could you try focusing with the lens a little bit? Or that button that you turn on the side? That guy. Yeah, there. Thank you. All right, you can slide the thing back and turn it off. I'm not going to start with this right this second. Slide the control back to just off. Yeah. Welcome, everybody. This is called... We can start the tape. This is called Andy's Alive, World's Deepest Canyon. And the name of the world's deepest canyon is Cotahuasi. Everybody say it together. Cotahuasi. Cotahuasi Canyon. And it's the world's deepest canyon. It's 2,000 feet deeper than the Grand Canyon. And there's actually three canyons deeper than the Grand Canyon that I know of. One in Mexico and two in Peru. Also the Coca Canyon.
Coca Falls.
Pardon?
Snake River Canyon.
Is that deeper?
It's pretty deep.
Okay. Snake River. Anybody else? If you could measure to the bottom of Lake Chelan, it's deeper than the Grand Canyon. If you measure from the bottom, cheat a little bit, go underwater. It's the top of the mountains. Anyway, that's not why we're here, really, but let me just say by way of introduction that this series is about mountain stories. Last week we did human-made wildernesses of war and politics and economic collapse. This week we're doing God-made wildernesses, and they tend to be more about real-life stories and the wonder of nature and traveling in amazing places that are wildernesses. We did a trip to Kilimanjaro, a trip to Mont Blanc, a trip across the spine of Papua New Guinea along a wartime trail called the Kokoda Trail. And this fourth one is about not going up, but going down. And it has a little bit more connection to the world of the first week, because I work for Lutheran World Relief. My name is Jonathan Frericks, and Lutheran World Relief has what we call a priority action zone in Cotahuasi Canyon in southern Peru. And let me explain that very briefly. What we're trying to say is, well, you know, it's real important maybe to stand by people and work with refugees and work with women and work with farmers and work with AIDS, people living with AIDS. But how about if we took a distinct geographic area and our partnership approach, which doesn't put Americans overseas, it puts partnership on the ground with local non-governmental organizations, and really looked at a natural boundary. Now, it could be any number of things, but a watershed makes a lot of sense. Because watershed is kind of like God's boundaries for something, isn't it?
Amen.
He sends the gentle rain from heaven on the evil and the good and the just and the unjust. And everything that happens is somehow bound together by what happens with the water that we all need for life. And nowhere is this premise more dramatic, I think, than in southern Peru. And just for a little bit of location, this is a very rough map of Latin America. Peru goes something like this. An amazing country, like all countries, they're all amazing. But Peru has 80% of the world's ecosystems. 80% representatives of the different kinds of ecosystems that ecologists have identified, because it goes from sea level and desert to the highest of mountains and then down to the richest of biodiversities in the Amazon basin. All of these provinces here are in the Amazon, the Peruvian Amazon. So Cotahuasi is located down here in southern Peru near the second city of Peru, Arequipa. Anybody been to Peru? Did you go to Arequipa? Yeah, beautiful city, huh? White limestone. It's the department of Arequipa. And in the department of Arequipa, there are, I don't know, 20 provinces. And one of them is the province of La Union. Union, La Union. And La Union basically covers Cotahuasi Canyon. So in this place, within the department, about there in Peru, is this province of La Union. And it's one of the poorer provinces in Peru. It's down in about the 90th percentile. And it's made up roughly of Cotahuasi Canyon. And I'll just explain a little bit about the dimensions and the geography. And then we'll have, essentially, after you've got a little bit of a background in fact, we'll have essentially a feast for the eyes, because we have a lot of slides, and this is the world premiere of these slides. And sitting here, just leaving now, is the other person who was in Cotahuasi Canyon, and joining us for the slides and commentary, and unrehearsed, so you'll get what we both thought about things that we haven't discussed fully. Lani, my daughter, who spent 6 weeks in this canyon together, and like I say, we were there because there's a Lutheran World Relief project making it a priority action zone. And as far as dimensions go, I think you could be helpful to say, helps it to understand that this canyon is roughly twice as deep as what you're in right now. Just the rough impression physically. If you took the peak of copper and kind of filled in the wall and then ran it up, doubled and put a bunch of peaks up there, and then ran up Martin's Ridge the other way at Bonanza and doubled them and put some peaks up there. And remember, when you get to the peaks, you're not getting to peaks. You're getting to the rim of the Altiplano. Everybody know what the Altiplano is? This incredible plain running down the spine of the Andes, where it's flat, essentially flat, at 4,000 meters, 4,200 meters, 4,400 meters. There are peaks sticking out going up to 6,500 meters. And those are values of 13,000, 14,000 feet for the plain and 19,000 feet for the summits, 20,000 feet for the summits, sticking out of the plain. And this goes the other way. So when you look at a summit, it's not really a summit, it's the edge of the Altiplano. So you really have this amazing trip from Arequipa, 12 hours in a bus, and between the 12 hours, the below freezing temperatures, the unpaved road that was much like driving through a quarry for 12 hours, and the fact that the road gets to 4,700 meters, which is taller than anything in the 48 states, 16,000 feet. Lani and I both made an offering of what was in our stomachs. The gods of the Altiplano at about 3 a.m. In the dust and the cold and the dark and the bouncing that went with this bus ride. But then you get there and you don't want to leave for a while because you don't want to ride the bus back. So we were happy to be there for 6 weeks. And we watched the other people come and go on a shorter timeline, some of the eight development workers we were with, and we were not jealous. They come and go on a 20-day cycle, the Peruvians who work there. The valley's been settled since about 1000 B.C. They figure that nomadic guanaco herders, guanaco is related to a llama and an alpaca, these cameloids, settled in there in about 1000 B.C. In about 500 A.D., something very important began to happen, which you'll see in the slides. They began to terrace the sides of the canyon. And so imagine again, twice what you're looking at here, and then run terraces up to the top of copper and well beyond, and then grow crops on them. On slopes like what we went to Dole Lake today and caught some big hungry trout, and on slopes like the slopes of Railroad Creek, terraces that go back to 500 A.D. In about 1,000 A.D., 500 to 1,500, there was two cultures called Nazca culture, the people who did the lines down on the desert floor near the sea, the Huari people, and then the Incas, of course, came and conquered them all and had a short reign of the Inca Empire. And then in about 1,800, 1780, the Spanish showed up, very late in the game to this remote canyon, and took the best land in the bottom of the canyon. You'll see the richest river flat land in the bottom of the canyon in many of the slides. And to this day, it's an important fact because if you're more Spanish, more white, more mestizo, you live lower. And the more Andino you are, you live higher. And so racism is sort of defined by gravity. The people with more racism against them have more gravity to deal with and live on steeper slopes and have worse land and are more marginalized and harder to reach, also by our development project. And I felt that was actually a liability, that the people who need help the most are the hardest to reach. And unless you have development workers who are part mountain goat, you aren't going to get to them as often as you would like to. In the 1990s, the Shining Path guerrilla movement came through, Sendero Luminoso, They terrorized some of the towns and villages that you'll see and made the place off limits. So really only like in about 93 did somebody, for example, do a rafting trip through this 200-mile canyon. And it's some of the best whitewater rafting in Peru. And there was a group of Americans who came through on rafts when we were there. And it's quite an adventure to do that. You can go all the way to the coast if you like. We are told that the Incas used it as a trade route from the sea to bring dried fish all the way up the Cotahuasi Canyon to Cusco, the Inca capital. And part of the plan of this project that we're involved in is to promote ecotourism. And the director of our partner agency in Arequipa would like to encourage people to not just do the Inca Trail. Anybody done the Inca Trail? Okay, 4 days.
Great. No, just a day.
Oh, okay. Great hike out of into Machu Picchu.
Yeah.
But to actually do this Inca trade route, the Grand Inca Trail, for about 15 days from Cusco to the sea through this canyon. A lot of trail work would need to be done before that's possible. But they're getting ready. They're making... improving trails, and they're building little tiny places in their homes where tourists who don't care about dirt floors and local food wouldn't mind staying. Eco-tourism, tourism run by local people, not owned by foreign or distant interests, part of the project. Let me just explain a little bit what Lutheran World Reef is trying to do there. There are five goals. Improve the quality of life of the 15,000 people in 11 districts of La Union province through production of organic ambient crops, citizen participation in local development decision-making, and greater awareness of gender and environmental issues. A lot of gender inequity to go with altitudinal inequity between the races. Our partner is called AIDES, the Lutheran World Reef's partner is called AIDES. It's a Peruvian group, this Association for Specialized Development, translates. And with them, the goals are increased income and food security for 1,000 peasant families through agroecological production of Andean crops for self-consumption and direct sales to national and international markets. They're trying to sell a crop I'll talk about in a second. Five market studies and formulation of a business plan. The training of 50 community organizations and 200 local government officials to enable them to participate actively in consensus-building dialogues toward formation of local development plans, training of 350 families to raise small farm animals, rabbits, guinea pigs, which they eat, and better chickens, and 250 families to cultivate small family gardens of vegetables and plants to improve nutrition, health, and women's income, and then training of 1,800 small farmers to manage water and conserve soil more effectively, plus the ecotourism. Now, put that all together and think of the whole population of 15,000 people and try to make life a little more sustainable in this unique spot that deserves to be preserved. And I'm going to pass around a little brochure. It says, Sacred Food of the Incas from the World's Deepest Valley. And it's a little promotional brochure by the Lutheran World Relief partner, AIDES. And you can see some of the scenery and some of the crops. This red thing here, which is related to millet or sorghum, is called quilicha. And any of the German visitors in the village present? They are able to sell kiwicha to health food stores in Germany and make a little bit of money. It's like the only thing in the valley that the outside world wants to buy. So I'll pass that around. And just mention a few of the crops you'll see. Kiwicha and quinoa are two of about five specialized Andean grains that grow very slowly at high altitudes up to 14,000 feet and are more nutritious than the grains that you and I think are the staff of life. So in this incredible place, you can grow something that's better for you than oats or barley or wheat, if you're patient and if you know how to make those terraces get water and the right treatment. Yeah.
Did you do a chuno?
Of which?
Chuno.
Chuno. Chuno.
Yeah.
The freeze-dried potatoes?
Horrible.
Yeah. Can you describe them?
I grew up, my dad said he made them deep fried, they're black. They stomp on.
You get a special kind of potato, you stomp all the water out of it, you leave it outside, it freezes at night, it dries in the sun in the day at high altitude, and it becomes freeze-dried. It'll keep for 20 years. And it tastes like it's been kept for 20 years. But you can eat it. And the Incas used it to power their armies, because it's dry. It's like trail food. It's freeze-dried.
incredible stuff. There are, I don't know how many varieties of potatoes in the Andes. That's where they came from, 100 varieties. And they live within the ecosystems. There's one kind here, one kind there, depending on soil, exposure, moisture, all that stuff. Yeah.
Were you here when John DeGraff was here?
Yeah.
Did you see his hot potatoes?
I missed that one.
Well, he talks about it was in Peru that they're able to grow potatoes without the insects or whatever it is do that. And how we were trying to imitate that back in the States now because our pesticides are not doing the trick anymore.
This one is called the cereal of immortality because the plant takes so long to decay. A plant takes a long time to decay, so says the folk wisdom. It actually makes you help live you live longer too. Quinoa has almost the perfect balance for the human diet. And I was going to bring a bar of quinoa trail food with me, and I forgot it. But it looks like a little tiny, I don't know what. Very kind of tasteless, but okay, you know. Purple corn makes a great drink. Tarui is a higher protein than soybeans in a kind of a bean. Many other kinds of beans, about 100 kinds of corn. Anise, from which you make licorice. Yacon is a special kind of root. I think the summary on this is, hey, God's creation is rich. When we think there's only one kind of apple, like Fuji's. Do you like Fuji's? What's your favorite apple? Yeah, I mean, what's in the supermarket? Four kinds? There's hundreds of apples. Same thing with grains or potatoes or anything else. They're all out there and they need to be preserved. And what this NGO is doing with outside support is preserving the biogenetic heritage of this unique spot that hasn't been ruined yet. It's too poor to have been ruined. There's five tractors in the canyon. They don't use fertilizer. Like the main form of power is human power and donkeys. So it's like a great place to save. That'll probably do for the introduction. Any questions? In terms of depth, you go from about 900 meters, which is about 3,000 feet, to 4,500 meters on the rim in the deepest place, which is about 16,000 and something feet. And that gives a depth of 3,555 meters. If you're into numbers and you think, why is it the deepest? Compare that with the Grand Canyon, it's about 2,000 feet deeper. The slides you'll see start here in the provincial town of Cotahuasi, about 1,500 people. And they kind of, you know, maybe you should have come in your hiking boots, or maybe you should have taken your altitude pills, because they're like this. One trip to Pampamarca, a second trip to Locrahuaca, a third trip to Charcana, this one on horseback, a fourth trip to Caspi, a fifth trip to Puica, and a sixth trip to Laguna Apalcocha, a lake. And it was the only way to see the project area. And when you get to a place like Puica, it's one of the five towns in the valley that is actually doing something called Mesa de Concertación. Every local organization in the community is represented around the table and are putting together a 21-year development plan. What is our community going to be like in 21 years? And it has the input of the women, the farmers, the irrigation committee, the teachers, the youth, the priest, if he's there. There's a big, huge gap of priests in this canyon. Anybody want to be a priest? Go to Cotahuasi. Get a job quickly. And they're saying, how are we going to be in 21 years? And if you think what they've been through, especially the Andino people, the Indian people, where they've lost so much. They no longer cultivate the upper half of the terraces. They don't have the social organization, the water control to do that. They have a long way to come back from what's happened to them during the conquista by the Europeans that goes back to Pizarro, 500 years. So you're really recovering slowly. And in the end of the day, it's interesting to try to compare what we're trying to do versus the needs versus the size, even if it is just one watershed. There's an interesting tension between those two ideas. So let's look at the pictures. Questions?
How was the canyon formed? Was it erosion and glaciers, water erosion?
I think just water, because It's not a glacial valleys like here. I mean, I'm not a geologist, but the rock is pretty soft. So it had a good chance to get the deepest. Didn't have to work that hard. Probably still took how many years? I don't know.
So, this is world premiere. Can somebody hit the light? Johnny, you want to get where you can see them? That's sort of a signature shot because what you're seeing is one of those peaks. This is Solimana, and it's 6,000 meters. So it's as high as McKinley. And way down here is the river in the shadow, and it's at about 1,000 meters at this, 2,000 meters at this point. So 6,000 feet. And then it doesn't look like it, but tucked away here and there and everywhere are side valleys and the main valley, and the chance for people to live where the sun and the rain and the dryness all work out that you can grow crops and find a bit of flat place to build your village.
And where's the Altiplano?
Well, on either side of that mountain. The Altiplano starts right about here. And it's all of this. I mean, it isn't flat. There are places where it's flat, but here it's sort of hilly, small mountains. And I think this is an interesting sort of counterpoint to that. This is the types of those grains that Aedes has isolated and identified and is trying to preserve. So it's the opposite of, excuse me, anybody here work for Monsanto or Intel? You know, or Archer Daniels Midland. It's the opposite of that. Instead of one hybrid that the whole world is supposed to be happy eating, it's saying, hey, God already did this. He made 100 kinds of corn. They all have something to offer. Let's preserve them. Our ancestors did. Why can't we? And, of course, the most famous citizens of Peru are llamas. And you see them in herds like this, and they're just, you just want to hug them, but they don't want to be hugged. And here they're painted to identify whose they are. And this is Lani and I before we began to lose weight, because we were hiking. And this is the town of Alca. A town which our partner agency said is pretty racist because it's pretty European. And the people who come, these people who drove these llamas down probably get treated a little bit bad and don't get what they deserve because they've come down from the heights to sell their llamas. But look at those guys. Look at this guy here. Wouldn't you like to have him for a pet?
Dinner.
Yes. Let's have the vegans on one side and the carnivores. Another picture from Alca. You see the Spanish colonial type influence. Sorry, that's not true. This is Cotahuasi. We're back in the main provincial town. And every Sunday morning at 10 o'clock, they ask a civic organization to participate in raising the flag and pledging allegiance and singing the national anthem of Peru. And this Sunday, the first one we were there, it was Aedes' turn to do that. In the village square of Cotahuasi, the provincial capital. You can see the canyon walls around you every time. There's Aedes' staff. This is Eric. Who's that, Lonnie?
A little boy.
No, this guy. That's, you know.
Need your help? No, I don't.
Yeah, you do.
Anyway, they're Peruvians.
And that's this is Marcella. This is
okay, Dad.
Come on. No, the guy who can speak Quechua. The shy guy. Him. Jeez.
Yeah.
He's telling us that these plants can help protect your. What are those flowers?
Campanulas.
Yeah. You can make a cream from them that's good for certain things, and they're doing that in one of their projects, and they also help keep bugs off your plants. So they're trying to do natural pesticides and herbicides.
Is that a cemetery or what was that?
It was a memorial, Mirador, a place to look out. There was a demonstration there early on because they're trying to privatize power in the south of Peru, a power company, and people don't want that to happen. So they were demonstrating all of it. There's actually a state of emergency for the first 3 days we were there. But you can see part of the town of Cotahuasi, and again, the rim of the canyon.
So they have power there. There's some power lines.
Yeah, there's electricity in this town and in two others.
Yeah,
three others.
There's a little electricity, but
the shining light involved in all of this valley.
Shining Path?
Sorry.
Yeah, in the 90s, early 90s. Okay. They came and messed around with it. So a woman at a store on the main square just comes out with a tire and dumps some gasoline on it and lights the tire as part of the demonstration.
Oh.
We thought she was a nice woman. There's one of another one burning. The Policia Nacional. But they were mad at the privatization. The rates are going to go up. The south of Peru feels a bit independent of the rest of Peru. Peru is one-third of the country lives in Lima. And that has a disproportionate effect on the rest of the country. You got cows in a lot of places, but they don't work real high up. A real typical shot of the floor of the canyon. Real typical look. Yeah, see the terraces? They're used here, and then they're old here. And if it's a better picture, there are places where there's actually terraces here, and there's terraces up there. And there you can see the Altiplano.
And the higher ones are not being used now?
No. And it's part... The quick answer we got a lot was climate change, but I kept asking and I got some better more varieties of that, and people said they don't have the social cohesion they used to have before the Spanish arrived. And they don't have a way of trading labor with each other to work together. They've been atomized by the domination of the outsiders.
Did you actually irrigate those upper ones?
Yeah. See, that what you find is amazing canals. Like if you've got a terrace here, you build an aqueduct straight out from this creek along the flank and around the back and over to there, and then you have, and then you trickle it down your terrace. And amazing earthworks involved. And that took a lot to maintain.
Jonathan, if the people that worked those terraces up there, would they also live up there, or would they just be like walking all the way down to the floor of the valley to sleep?
No, they live in high villages, but they would still walk the equivalent of a quick hike to, you know, Cloudy Pass to check on your irrigation system. This was a whole family threshing that field. Was it barley or wheat? Threshing that field of wheat. This is something to really explain. The people in the valley, I think 57% of the agricultural energy is human power. So they had sickles, scythes, and carrying the whole head of wheat. I mean, it's just like the Bible. To the threshing floor here on this canvas, and then the next picture. Yeah, he's got a stick, the kids are off cutting the wheat, the dad is whacking the pile of cut heads to thresh the wheat. That means to get the grains of wheat out of the ear that they live in. And they were working on this for 2 or 3 weeks, I think, this one field. It wasn't a big field. So you really had a sense of time having stopped. Just down the road, this was the course of a long walk in our first couple days. This guy was making his horse go around and around and around. Same idea, but the horse's hoofs do what the stick was doing in the last picture. And he promptly dropped his horse or let it stop and went and got this earthen flask with a corn stalk cork in it.
and offered me a glass of chicha, which is fermented corn drink. And I found out only later that it's actually okay to accept it because you have to boil it for 45 minutes before it'll become what it needs to become.
Did you accept it?
I did, but I, you know, did the old sip lightly and didn't quite finish. You know, try to strike a balance between your stomach and what's going to happen to you the next night and how nice this guy is. Yeah, it's busy. This village told us, the guys we talked to here, this is just in the floor of the valley, half an hour drive from the main town where there are three Catholic priests, that if they want the Catholic priest to come, they have to pay him $20. Otherwise he doesn't come. He comes on their saint's day and that's it. So there's one church service a year in that church. And we heard that over and over again. There's a real lack of priests. And there's a couple other groups moving in, but there's a huge vacuum of teaching. Mm-hmm. Did I explain this one?
On our walk, we were getting closer to the town that we lived in, and on the right-hand side, there was a little archway that was going into a field. And we stopped to take a picture, and this woman comes out, and they were threshing the kiwicha, and you get that the top of the kiwicha is really long, and then you hit it and get all the grains out, but a lot of the purple stuff gets in it too. So you have to sift it for days and days. And their whole family was outside pouring the same crop through the sifter, and just again and again and again. And she was also really nice and got this, a drink and this like honey stuff that they make. They boil honey until it gets really hard. And it's a spread, and she got us these like 4-year-old stale animal crackers, and yeah, I know, and put the honey on them, and she asked us to come back and visit, so we just stayed there for a while, and were talking to them about different things, and amazingly enough, they had Arabic music, which I thought was a little bit strange, but
they liked it.
Yeah, they did. But it was just sort of a cultural experience that it's so close to the town, but they're so far removed and they never go in there and they don't really have a lot of interaction with the town people.
The man, the father on the left here, is an Israelite. It's a sect that was founded by a Peruvian pastor. And he's an itinerant preacher, goes around and evangelizes for this homegrown variety of Christianity called Israelite. There he is.
Do they speak in Spanish tongue?
Yeah, Spanish and Quechua. Mm-hmm. This is the bus that we both, lightened the load of during the night. And here it is in the valley. It actually goes to three little towns in the valley when it comes in from the Altiplano every morning in the wee small hours, about 4 a.m. And here it was, had a flat tire on this walk we took, and we found it. Reina is the company. We say Transport Reina. And so...
It's the best stretch of road, too.
Yeah. Here's our hotel where we stayed. We were the only guests for the whole 6 weeks almost. And the room cost, we had two rooms at $2.50 a piece. And that's Kiwicha on the right of the archway. And then there are canna lilies and hibiscus, I think, roses. It was a really a neat little spot.
How do they get by with one guest in 6 weeks?
Well, this family grows honey and runs a little store and teaches at a kindergarten and has this hotel that nobody comes to. And
was it clean?
No. For $2.50, you know, what do you want? Clean? No. Here's a little church on the edge of our town, Tomepampa, which is kind of cute. And you see just everywhere the mountain rises behind you. Mm-hmm. Everything is mud brick, sun-baked mud brick.
Are those cactus on top of the arch?
Yeah, a lot of cactus.
And on top of walls, too, so your animals can't get out and people can't get in.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a young man named Ciro. He was the son of a woman who we had engaged to cook an evening meal for us, so we didn't just have to live on what we could get out of stores. And the first night he took his net and we went out to the river. This is the Cotahuasi River, the one that carved the canyon. And he caught 12 trout in about an hour. And we had trout for supper the first night.
How big?
Smaller than the ones I caught today at Dole. At Dole Lake. So, about a foot.
And they must have been introduced then.
I think so, yeah. And there's actually a ban on it right afterwards because they're all small, and he said they're small, and so he said, stop, wait, give it 6 months. They need to grow up.
How did they compare?
Just fried, you know, a little batter. His mom was a real good cook. That's Cyril with his new net. He's off at a university or a high school or something in Arequipa. There's one of the trout.
Is the temperature in the valley cooler then?
Yeah, it's, the lower you go, the hotter it gets. Mm-hmm. The sun is warm, but the minute the sun goes behind the hills, which happens very early, and you know, late in the morning and early in the afternoon, comes up at about 8, goes down at about 4, and the minute it's gone, it gets cold. But not horrible cold at this time of year. It was their winter, but it wasn't too terrible. We took a hike out of Cotahuasi to go to a fiesta where there would be a bullfight, and it involved walking up this valley, and Lani was very brave to not know exactly how far she'd be walking. And we met this very nice farmer who, again, wanted to give us something to drink, and we had a nice talk with him in the valley as we climbed. A house like his, the kind of houses you saw, you just felt like you were, you know, instantly back 500 years. There's so many parts of the valley that are virtually untouched in the general appearance of things. You can't get there by car, you can't, there's no electricity, I mean, you name it, what changes stuff?
In that city of 15,000, there'd be schools right at the high school, or what city do you
Sorry, 1,500 in the capital and 15,000 in the whole canyon,
okay.
In about 30 villages. Arrest?
This would be at the point where I was about to die. 5 hours later.
Yeah, just to, a little reference. The town, Cotahuasi, is at 9,000 feet. Here we're probably at 12. Mm-hmm. And we're going to a village at 12. And it's a long way up the valley still. And the rim up there is at 15 or 16. Looking down from where Lani was sitting, pretty much, you see another village. We never visited this one, but there is a village tucked away in that side canyon. And in the bottom, you see the river and the basic canyon. Then go up the other side, the north slope, less hospitable, drier, more cooked by the sun. A lot of donkeys. The donkeys are cute, and they're so capable in the mountains. They really have, I think they have an unfortunate bad name. They're just wonderful animals.
Are they better than llama?
As good. Not as good, but boy, they're good with. You compare, you watch them compared to a horse, and there's no comparison that they can do.
How wide is the canyon on average?
Oh boy, that's really hard to judge. I suppose.
Well, at the bottom at least.
Well, the bottom is, you know, sometimes it's 100 yards, sometimes it's a mile. At the top, it's probably 10 miles as a crow flies.
Do they generate any hydroelectric power?
Yeah, the whole canyon is run out of one plant at the town called Alca, we said, where they're a good racist. So here's the bullfight. And there's no real toreadors, you know, it's kind of the local.
Those are like 11-year-old kids.
Well, at the end it was 11, but at first it was for, say, the 18-year-old, you know, pick your best high school job and then send him out there to get away from the bull.
Do they kill the bull at the end?
No, it was very humane.
Okay.
They just mess with him and then they run him out, and every bull in the village comes and has a try.
Oh.
And then you have a band over there, and I've always wanted to play in a band, and this is the band I could play in. Because there's a place going to be that some of the people only knew about four notes.
But, you know, the people, these are all more or less Andean people. They're not the European types, by and large. This is quite high up. And they have a hard life. And this is a big deal to celebrate.
What were they celebrating, do you know?
Each village has a date that they were founded on or that they gained recognition. And every year they have a festival that commemorates that date.
And here's a real problem. This is a borracho. This is a drunk. And at the fiestas, at the corridas, the bullfights, it looked like maybe a third of the people were getting drunk, either on the fermented chicha, the fermented corn liquor, or on beer, and or on methyl alcohol.
No,
it's not methyl. It's
industrial.
It's like industrial alcohol. It's not methyl alcohol, but it's...
It'd be ethyl alcohol.
Ethyl alcohol. Yeah. Ethyl alcohol. You can buy a Coke bottle full for about 60 cents and be gone for the whole day. And it's really sad. I mean, it is the single biggest bummer. And they could spot Lonnie at 50 meters, no matter how drunk they were, and make a beeline for her.
How do they act when they're drunk? Do they dance? Do they sing? Do they just pass out?
All of the above,
okay.
In that order.
Uh-huh.
And this guy's, you know, was the pass out stage. He was at the corrida, and I just stood right over him and took his picture because it was such a phenomenon.
And it's not just the men, just so you know.
Right.
It's also the women, and they give children. Like I was offered this fermented corn drink, and
right.
I could have taken it and.
But I was always watching her. A view from that place where the fiesta was down to our town. That's our town right in the foreground. And that's a sports field on the side, the big surface. And you can see the river cutting through and winding up there and another town in the distance. And here's a little misadventure. It was 5 o'clock. The fiesta was fun. It was great to have a beer myself after the, 8 hours it took us to get there. And then we thought, well, there's our town. It's an hour, hour and a half. We'll just walk down to our town. Well, we didn't ask anybody if the path we were on was the right path. And we spent the night on the ridge. About two-thirds of the way down. And Lonnie was very brave. First time she's ever been lost. There she is the next morning with about 3,000 stickers in her fleece.
Okay, everyone can see there like 50 more.
Yeah, and she found one that she hadn't caught after 18 hours of labor today. Another trip up to Pampa Marca, a town at about 13,000 feet. Looking across again at Solimana on the other side of the canyon, and this is a town that's ready to receive tourists. Six families have prepared rooms in the best style that they are able to do, and a group of 9 French tourists were ready to come and work 3 weeks on preparing trails, putting up signs, getting ecotourism going here. Ecotourism means tourism that helps the local people, that doesn't exploit them, that lives with their culture, that celebrates their festivals, and really puts you in a place of being a guest and not a pampered outsider who deserves things that they could never afford. So if you want to try it, I'll give you the address and you'll have probably the cheapest vacation of your life and the most unusual because you'll be eating things, including guinea pigs, that you never thought you'd eat. You can beg off the guinea pigs. There's a street in that town. See the sewage down the middle, or the water runoff? The sewage is not there. That's off on the side. The water drainage is there. And the typical costume of a woman who is essentially, probably mostly Quechua, with her kid on the back. The kids spend so much time being warm and close to their moms on the back. And Solimana again across the whole canyon on the other side of the Altiplano. Yeah, it really helps. This is the village square of Pampa Marca again. That's the mayor's offices, the municipal building on the right, the church, which is now used to store gasoline.
name's Suleimana. Because the priest never comes.
Is that a tree unusual there?
Look like an older tree.
Last month.
Oh.
July.
July. Wow.
That tree's unusual, but look at that. At 14,000 feet with water and protection. It's in the Leela Mountain. You know, microclimate is the name of the game. Here's all the people who came up that day. Myself, Raquel's mom. These are all workers at the place we were at, except for the woman on the right, who's a grad student in Scotland doing a paper. They're all Peruvian. And we visited the families with the tourist rooms. Here's Dad having a bowl of soup for breakfast, and the girl washing her hands, ready to go to school. And then Mom comes out and washes her hair and puts it up before she goes to school. And there's a real big push to keep girls in school. Meanwhile, in the courtyard, they'll have these corn drying, which then they can do all kinds of things, store them, grind them. In order to keep, you have to grow your own food and store it and keep it for the winter and the years when the months when you don't have a harvest. Yeah, there's also stuff drying on the roof, the red stuff.
Mm-hmm. Why don't they let the corn dry in the field and then pick it?
They do, but they also do this.
Well, they plant other crops on the same field as well.
So. Well, they take it out early then. Yeah, they take it out.
Another typical courtyard. Look at the house all of stone here, which is kind of cool. The only new thing is those corrugated iron roofs. And then chicken running free, eating all kinds of stuff that ends up on the ground. All kinds of things going on in the courtyard.
Jonathan, there's no mortar, is there? It's just rock. Or do they have mortar on it?
They use dirt, mud for mortar.
Up above, they don't.
And then this woman. Here she's drying corn, and she's weaving. Anybody go to the weaving looms here?
Yeah.
Look at her loom, and look at what she's coming up with.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Just there, sitting in her yard. Another one of her pieces. Game of soccer develops in the town square. The World Cup was on right now, by the way, and it was fun to watch that when we were there. Some kids looking over a ruin at us, or me when I was there in the thing. And then look on the ridge up there, you see some strange edges to the cliffs. See them?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, just wait.
Jonathan, you got TV reception there?
They had a little generator. And with an antenna, they could pick up the little one channel from Cotahuasi.
They're really misogynistic in Peru, really misogynistic. They won the World Cup or came in seriously about 20 years ago.
Yeah. Okay, now these are some of the things that happen to you when you're lost or just hiking and don't watch out. This kind of cactus breaks off by the nub with those spikes. And it manages to go into your skin in five different directions at once. And so you sit there and you think, now which one am I going to pull out first? You try one and you just make the others worse. So you try another one and you make the others worse. And you think, who designed these things? Lupin? Beauties. And you could just see them get bigger the lower you went and smaller the higher you went through the whole range of the canyon wall.
Is that a native variety or is that a exotic for there?
I don't know. I think it's native. There are a lot of them. How does it look compared to ours here? Yeah, look at the yellow. I just enjoy nature. I don't know anything about it, but this could be pretty. And then I'm going up this path up to the place I pointed out to you before, and I saw this chulpa. A grave. Oh. An ancient grave beside the path right there. See the hole?
Yes. Why is it open?
Well, there's nobody to bother it. So I went up to it, and I got a bit overexposed, but that's what was inside. Wow. It was just right there by the path.
They just leave a body in it?
I guess. Two bodies, unless they have two heads.
Three.
Three. That's what was up on the skyline at the edge of the Altiplano. It's called a rock forest. You know, like you have in New Mexico?
They have it in La Paz, too.
It's not small, it's huge. That would be 30 feet tall. Yeah. So I went nuts. You're going to see about six pictures of these things.
Cool.
Yeah. Wow. Looking down at the terraces on the other side of the side canyon.
What's the scale of this? I thought we could give you the picture.
The one on the right is 15 feet tall. There's Solimana, and there's one part of this formation. What was your question?
Why does it have a crack on the top?
A crack, yeah. One of them is cracked. I think you'll see it again now. There. Okay.
Can I go for you?
Thank you. There. It's just breaking. But nobody's pushed it up. They're actually very fragile. And they're selling this as a tourist attraction. Come to our village, go up and see the rock forest. But don't climb on it because you'll wreck it. Now that's the side valley, and there was a place to go to 4 hours, 5 hours walk up the end of that creek behind the next little pass, and then this little village here, and observation posts that they built to keep track of the Spanish when they came through 200 years ago for the first time and stuff like that. So it's nothing fancy, but interesting life in a place like this. And look at those fields tucked away in the terraces. Mm-hmm.
And how long did it take you to hike up here?
Not far. I mean, it was like 600 meters. Oh. So 1,800 feet, 2,000 feet.
Jonathan, that rock horse, is it wind erosion? Or how does it get to...
No, I think it's water.
It's
look at those terraces. You know, it reminded me of Turkey. And, you know, that's Ephesus, and, you know, there's a Hittite settlement, and here's a Greek settlement. And, I mean, you could just see all kinds of stuff having been done to that landscape.
Or Cappadocia.
Yeah. And then there's a waterfall. Look at that. I think it's 200 feet. You remember? 250 feet. We didn't take the time to go down, but it falls here and then goes right around that mountain and off down into the canyon. So they're selling the waterfall. Say, come and see our waterfall.
Are there snakes?
We didn't see any. And there was a bullfight in the village next to this one, too, a place called Cochapampa.
Same band.
Same band. They make the rounds.
Drums different color. Yeah.
And then here's a staff member, Betty of Aedes, with two different kinds of kiwicha. See the purple and the yellow, gold. And she knows a lot about it. She goes around and talks to the farmers, helps them understand how to protect this stuff and do it organically, because the organic is the big selling point. They're organic because they're poor. But they realize now that the outside world values organic as we get into genetically modified stuff and pesticides and all this other stuff. So they're trying to make a little niche for themselves there. Here's the mom, the farmer and the farmer woman and farmer man. And they're picking up. Look at those corn ears. I mean, is that the corn you've ever seen?
No.
But this is where corn came from. Huge kernels.
So what do they use as fertilizer?
Cow manure. Aedes teaches them to do composting.
Do they use human waste too?
No, I don't think so. And I just noticed, these guys are in the field all day. What do they have? Well, They have a pot with some potatoes cooking over a little low fire, and they have a set of beans here. These big, huge beans inside those pots. And that's the day. There's an older couple working together.
So about how big do you think those kernels are? Like the end of your fingers? Is that big or small?
They're the size of marbles. And they're potent.
Flavorful?
Flavorful, but also they do things at the other end of your body that became a problem. Now look at that. That's the Cotahuasi Canyon. A little bit of everything. Terraces, alpine peak type thing, you know, distance, depth.
Did you climb that weight mountain?
No, I wouldn't have needed help.
Not yet.
And then we took a horse trip. This is trip number 3 now. And here's Eric laughing to himself because he knows what Lonnie's going to go through on that horse. And Raquel was choosing not to join us, the girl next to Lonnie, the Scottish, the one in Scotland at grad school. What was your horse's name?
I don't even want to know. I don't remember.
So forgive the little, a couple now, we'll get into the sort of the family slideshow aspect, but you know, when your daughter's on a horse in this canyon, you've got to take a picture. So there's Lonnie and our guide,
Percy,
and his wife, and their, how old baby?
2-month-old baby.
We were on the horses that day for 12 hours. Lonnie was smiling at the beginning. Then you get off and walk. And then we had 6 donkeys with various kinds of supplies that would be the way to supply the shops and things in the village we're going to. Look at the mountain in the distance. They carry the goods. Spanish lesson 101, a puente colgante. Swinging bridge.
Is that the rescue ladder in case you drop?
We don't know what that ladder is.
It's the old bridge.
Pardon?
Did you walk at something here?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm the mother of this little girl.
Right.
I'm not little.
And it
happened. I get this phone call 3 days into this trip, and she said, oh, guess what? I learned these Spanish words. And I said, oh, good, good. What have you learned? And she said, well, I learned the word for swinging bridge. And I said, oh. Yeah, and chasm. And I didn't hear from him again for about a week and a half, and I thought, well, that's it then.
That's Lonnie leading her horse. They told us not to ride across. It's good we had good advice, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, did it really move?
Not too much.
Well, there were holes in it, so.
But I had never been in steep cut terrain on a horse and haven't been on a horse that much, but it was really something. I had to really work on, you know, my relationship with God and various other things. You know, to entrust your life for almost the whole time to a less intelligent being was something. I said, you know, I don't know this guy. Why am I sitting on him with this 1,000-foot drop? But they're from there, and they know what to do. And when we came back 3 days later, it was just like, hey, I've been doing this for a long time.
Was there a snowstorm that had occurred?
Yeah, very unusually. We had about 3 feet of snow up on the Altiplano.
Oh, wow. I'm not happy there.
Oh, this is on the
There had been a little landslide. And so Percy said, get off and walk.
And the mom with a baby.
Yeah,
mom with a baby too.
What were they going to do?
Yeah.
Hmm?
They live at the village and they've been in the town. They're going back to their village. That's my horse. He was named after the former president of Peru. His name was Alan. Alan Garcia. All my horses were named after the ones I got by chance were named after all the presidents. But look at the deck. Can you go back to that, Michael? That's probably 7,000 feet down to the river at this point.
Wow. Does the government make the trail bother you? To the local folks?
Not too much. Big altitude. No. Just, you know, now there's a village tucked away on the end of that spine. And if you look closely, where is it? It's really interesting. They went and got their water and took it across and then down one of these places to have water. It's amazing what they had done, just to have water in the village.
Through an aqueduct?
That's the square in the town. We were a bit in front of the party. We brought our horses into the square and waited. And a lady told us very sweetly, you're not supposed to bring your horses in here because of what they do.
Oh.
Because, look at the cross. Another church that isn't used much. The village of Andamarca. There was another mother and child with us. This child was 3, I think. And that mom was like the principal of the school in the village we're going to. Oh, that must be the end of the first trade. Do you know how to put in a new one?
Yep.
It's right there in the box. Any questions while we're changing?
What was the forest like there? If any forest.
No forest.
Just scattered trees?
Yeah. See, I just looked at my watch and realized the time here. Look at that depth. And here you're looking down the valley, and it gets very dry and almost desertic. But you can grow tropical fruits in those places that are watered. So they had custard apple, guavas, granadillas, if you've ever heard of those. Wonderful things that are from the tropics. The town we were going to in the distance on the shelf with its fields, and then fresh snow up on the peaks at the back of that side canyon. The women of the town who are involved in the project in trying to make better diets for the community, trying to contain alcoholism, trying to make sure that girls go to school, trying to eat more protein for the kids especially. The family we stayed with, Edith, the mother on the right, and her 11-year-old daughter here on the left. This is the family we ate with. That's her kitchen. I was pretty amazed. Nobody's got a stove. Cooking just like this.
Can they leave the sticks in the fire instead of having firewood?
Yeah.
Because there are no trees that are big enough.
Here's Sabi. Very, very house on fire type girl. who was busy with the turkeys, although the turkeys were busy with each other. At least the male was busy with the female. There's Lani and Sabi. After about 2 hours, Sabi got onto Lani's lap. There's Sabi and one of her friends.
Just getting clothing. The community obviously is buying clothing. Or is it being
fresh? No, they're buying it. They're buying it.
And did you see clothing stores? They're just like little tiny, multi-service type little stores.
Yeah, some of the improved chickens provided by Aedes here, a better race of chickens to one of the women's in the women's group, better race of rabbits, better race of guinea pigs, twice the size, makes 3 times as many babies as the local guinea pigs. Yeah, it's the best meat they have.
It's very greasy.
Very, very rich, I think.
They probably need the fat.
And then turnips at 12,000 feet. Bowls this woman had collected from like Nazca culture, Wari culture, 1,000 years old, just out in the fields.
she was selling them?
I think she would have. I don't know. You're not allowed to buy them, technically, I don't think. Mm-hmm. If you take them out of the country, you can get into trouble. The high school students were working on a garden to learn about, you know, better forms of agriculture themselves. There's Solimana again across the canyon. They wear uniforms. Men building a house with stones and mud as mortar. And they were drunk in their work by midday. And they were finished working and really drunk by about 4 o'clock. It was pretty sad. There are rock paintings from who knows when, 1000 BC, on some rocks above the village. And a boy, this boy took me up there, although he never couldn't find them when he got there. So he was a dubious guy, but we found them in the end. He's 10 years old. The trip back, you pass by a famous waterfall called Sipia. There's a waterfall tucked away in that shadow. See the water in the foreground? It's about to go over the drop right there, looking down the canyon toward the more dry south end. There's the waterfall. Here's where it drops through. And there's Raquel, our friend, leaning out over the end to take a picture.
And the water quality, do they just drink right from the river? Are they getting the...
They can, but... We can, you can.
Yeah.
Just above Sepia, we put iodine pills in. Going for a hike to a far village took 15 hours to get there, and on the hike, I met, first time in my life, a casket.
Oh, my God.
Making the hike as well. The only way to get a casket to that village.
Oh.
This guy was carrying a lid, and another guy was carrying the body. It had a sliding window, you could see the person inside. An Inca tunnel in the trail, and the casket couldn't quite fit through. But look at the drop-offs there. A man threshing grain again, the village you go through with his feet. And then we met two drunk guys who were fitter and faster than we were sober, and they carried the teacher's bag I was with, and then they showed us a shortcut. Well, the shortcut involved walking through an aqueduct on a cliff face. They're drunk. And they take an aqueduct on a cliff face. At one point, there was a cross, and I thought, this is perfect, you know. But a horse had fallen off the path above and died when it hit the aqueduct. And some wonderful people offered us tea at night. We got to the village at about 10 a.m. and I stayed with this family the next day. And she's grinding with a smooth stone on a very flat stone, a rounded grinding stone, grinding up a special kind of potato. And she was a wonderful, wonderful mom and woman. And some of her will have to stop. She did her kids' hair in the morning for going to school too. And the schoolyard was below their house. There's a reservoir. And if you, now we're in a village exactly opposite the place we just showed you with Sabi and the guinea pigs. That's here, and now we're here. And it would take you 2 full days to walk from one to the other. But we would be a bit back to Cotahuasca in the meantime. The schoolyard, and these guys were late, and so they had to go out there and frog march around the playground. You know, get down on their haunches and frog march around for being late. That was the punch.
You might have to do that right now. We're two investors.
Okay, let's frog march for breakfast. We went to the river with the kids from the school to go swimming in the river. And they were so happy to do this, except they kept running off to look at the girls who were swimming downstream. There's the whole class and the teacher. The reason I was there, because she's associated with the project. And why don't we stop with that? A beautiful view of the canyon. I can flip through the rest of them sometime if anybody wants to see them.
There's
a forum at what, 8:30?
8:30.
Yeah,